Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It is good to be with you this evening.
You know what I learned about singing this week?
What?
If you're breathing properly, when you inhale, your belly should go out.
Yeah.
Try it, Bubba.
Yeah?
Your diaphragm.
I don't do that, ever.
My belly's just kind of already out.
Wait, what
was it again?
So when you breathe in before you're getting ready to pop a note out, you should feel your belly come out.
Yeah, that's proper breathing.
I don't breathe like that ever. I just feel my lungs fill, but like you should breathe. You should breathe, and then your belly should.
You're taking voice lessons?
Kind of stick. No, I listen to a podcast.
Oh, yeah. That's like the first thing they teach you.
Yeah,
I remember that in chorus.
Yeah.
I never took chorus. Oh. I never took any singing type, whatever, and so this lady drops this on me. I'm like,
6 years.
What?
This hurts my belly, and I don't like doing it.
That's how you get those great opera singers. They got this power and everything. And
here's the thing, though. You see these rough and tumble dudes, you know, singing on the radio or whatever. I'm like, I bet they ain't doing that. You think they at home working on their diaphragm?
But they are.
Yeah, I think they are.
Ah, man.
The rock guys that last, they are, too.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I was going to say, Nikki Sixx from Motley Crue, he's kind of pretty honest about the kind of stuff he does. He's been in the game for 30-some-odd years now. He still does lessons and stuff like that.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Anyway. I do, too. No, I don't.
No, he doesn't. Yeah. Dan is trying to like himself to Nikki Sixx from Motley Crue right now, and he's not doing a great job.
A lot of mention it to me.
Yeah, man, all the time. I'm like, Nikki, no, not Nikki Sixx, Dan Hudson.
I keep thinking I should take guitar lessons.
Oh, man, maybe.
Hey, I've been thinking that same thing, too, Dan.
I just want to know.
Yeah.
That's intimidating. I once took guitar lessons from you, Ben.
Well, they were bass lessons.
Excuse me, yeah.
Yeah, so, I had that same thought, actually. Yeah. Like, I think it would take only a matter of, like, 10 or 12 weeks to just bump your game up one level, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I actually think I bought one off the, it was $10 or whatever the online course, Udemy, that's what it was. And, like, it looks like a cool thing, it had a lot of great feedback, and then I just don't sit down and do it.
Yeah. I need a real person to sit down and say, slap me and say, no,
that's incorrect.
No.
You're doing that all wrong, Nikki.
Right. No. All right.
All right. You're listening live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hey, if you didn't get a chance, go back and check out the last episode. We had a chance to talk with the guys from,
Discover Hope.
Yeah, Discover Hope. They're a cool organization, and they're just some guys who said, there needs to be a group of Jesus people providing a solution here in the town of Newton. And one of the things that stuck with me was when the sheriff, Aaron, was saying that, like, he was in, what was it?
Ohio.
Ohio.
Yep.
And they knew of Newton, Iowa.
Yeah, I said Newton, Iowa. Oh, yeah, meth town.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. I listened to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was real interesting to see how, how far that spreads. But, anyway, I thought that was a really good, it was a really cool example of some guys saying there's a gap here. And Jesus folks can help fill it, and then how they meeting up at the local church and having them kind of take part in it, because like I always struggle with thinking like how much do you help a guy or how much do you teach him to help himself and figure out kind of like are you doing it for him or
right.
you know whatever. And so anyway, I thought it was very interesting. So if you didn't have a chance, go back and listen to that, and then look for things in your area that you can help out with, ways you can, those guys can always use money, they can always use prayer, time, people volunteering for those types of things, get involved with those guys. So
I think I'd really like to go out and sit in on some of the meetings. Like, yeah. You know, I was listening to those guys talking, like it's been a recurring thing over the last week or whatever. Like, it's this kind of stuff where you roll up to heaven and he says, "Well done, good and faithful servant," instead of, "Well, I see you made it."
Barely.
You're in.
Yeah. I mean, you sinned less, kind of. And that was the extent. Well, I'm glad you got, like, holy cats. Like, I think I likened it earlier this week on like, Jesus writes you this awesome check and like, you are just too much of a coward to cash it. You know what I'm saying? You tell everybody how awesome the check is. You're like, yeah, my life is changing. I got this check. And then you walk around with it in your back pocket for 30 years and never really plunk it down and trade the joy and get the joy and the peace and the and all the great things that come with following Christ. And you're like, you tell everyone what it looks like to follow Christ, and maybe you've given it a shot sometimes, but like, you never actually cash that check in. That explains a weird dude that like that beams all the time and like, you know, and it smells like Jesus. That man cashed the check. You're out here sweating it out, hustling it. You know what I'm saying? Putting a bunch of work in and be like, I'm gonna do this thing, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then you're defeated by it and you go this way and you go that way and it's nothing but a boat and the waves, you know. And the guy that casts the check's like, yeah, you know, I moved to Zimbabwe for a little while. And then I'm like, yeah, the Lord didn't have me there anymore. And so I threw all my money away and then I came back here and started a homeless shelter. And then I did, and you're like, what the heck is wrong with you? I gotta get Jesus to fit in my office 9 to 5. I wait till a guy takes a sandwich and I'm like, bread of life, you know? You know, and I just feel like Jesus up there, like, cash the check, will you? Stop doing that bread of life crap at break time. It's stupid. It's stupid.
You're doing a Ned Flanders. Nobody likes that guy.
And I think the point is, right, is like, once you actually do that, your 9 to 5 becomes different.
That's right.
Like as opposed to trying to scheme your 9 to 5 or scheme your family time or scheme your softball league or whatever it is, right? Like you're looking for angles. The whole peripheral changes. The whole, you know, whatever you can take in, that all shifts and you stop scheming and then you just start kind of living.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's different.
You live off the bounty the Lord has provided, right? He's given you all of this. Like the promises he makes are outlandish. You know what I'm saying? Forgiveness, total forgiveness of sin. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness. You know what I'm saying? All of this stuff, he says, this is what happens in my kingdom. And we're like, I'm working on the patience part, but I just cannot seem to grill through it.
I got a bookmark and a crochet doily for patience this week.
Yeah. And like, you know, we're doing it wrong. You got to cash that check. Just cash the check, right? And then find yourself talking to drug folks and then go, yes, this is where the Lord has me. And I'm not saying you got to do the drug thing, but I'm just saying that like God's created you for big, kingdom-sized things, and you are slogging it out and wondering why it's not working.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Do you see I just watched the first episode like a few weeks ago. I mean, the first season. I'd be that guy though. I'd be like, he had no clue.
Right.
You know, I don't know if he does now, but I haven't got that far. But I'm like, I'd be like the total nerd. Like, oh yeah. I see you're doing the drugs.
Yeah, and right.
They'd be doing it in front of me. I'd be like, I wouldn't even know. I mean, I am.
Yeah.
That's not where I think Jesus wants me.
That's right. So, and so that is as much to say as like, you don't necessarily have to start a Discover Hope 517 in your area.
Yeah, God's got guys on that.
Yeah, God has a guy. Like,
we know them now.
That's right.
Yeah.
Cash the check he gave you. And I don't know what that means, but here's what I know it don't mean. It doesn't mean this boring, lackluster, non-present of the Holy Spirit. You know, where you are fighting tooth and nail every day to figure out whether you're on the right side of this thing or not. That is not what that is. That is not what that check does.
Yeah.
And so you have either not cashed it or you don't have it in your pocket. And so, like, I'm begging you to cash that check. I'm talking to Mike Foost here.
Yeah.
This is like me talking to a mirror. I'm begging you to cash this check and just do this thing. All the promises you tell everyone about and all the kingdom that you're inviting them to, and you believe it when you're saying it. And then when you step back and realize all the stuff that you've said and you're like, maybe I haven't cashed that check. Maybe I'm still fighting this thing, and it's either because I'm too much of a coward or I'm too arrogant. Both of those things have to go.
Hey, Dan, by the way, if you see somebody blowing smoke out of their face that doesn't have a cigarette, a vape, or possibly an inhaler, they're probably doing drugs in front of you. So if you're that oblivious to it, just heads up.
I got to pay more attention.
Okay.
Most details, guys I catch details. Doing it have a brown paper bag with 3 X's on it. That's how I know.
That is very convenient. It's like, oh, that's obviously some kind of moonshine or worse.
That is illicit. That had to have been smuggled here.
It's like an old school Mickey Mouse cartoon.
Oh, man. Steamboat Willie.
All right, you're listening live for The Path. Here's what we got going on the show this week. So, I don't know, just came across some articles, some which are funny and some which are, I mean, just not funny at all.
They sound great.
Yeah, so
you're selling it.
So I'll start with something that I found amusing. So if you guys, obviously, it's flooding in Texas, right? I mean, it's flooding like mad fire down there, and the Twitter is blowing up at Joel Osteen. they're hosed at him because they're like, hey, you have millions of dollars that you've gotten from the citizens of Houston. You should open up your church. You own a basketball arena. I mean, you bought a basketball arena. You should open your church to help them out. The Lakewood Church has been relatively silent on the matter. They said they didn't have services on Sunday. They said we're closed for flooding. And there's been like a few pictures of some like minor flooding in the building. But otherwise, like they're just not speaking on the matter. And so, one, like, I was kind of, it struck me thinking about the world has an expectation of what churches will do,
mm-hmm.
of what the people of Jesus will do, regardless of whether they are people of Jesus, like even like call them angry atheists for all I care. But they're looking at the church and saying, you should be doing this. Are they being unreasonable here? Is it unreasonable for them to look at a guy like he's got a big building? It seems like they got plenty of resources around and say, hey, look, you should open the joint.
No. Not at all.
I'm glad they have that impulse they should. I would hope they would expect it out of the church because the church should be doing.
Yeah,
it.
They will know me by you, by the way you love.
Yeah.
And we're like, man, the church has got a little bit of water.
You're going to friggin' warehouse open it up to people. Are you kidding me? Like, dude, you got the space. Let them in.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I kind of had that reaction. I was trying to figure out a way to defend him. Now, I mean, not him specifically, right? But, like, it's interesting when people are looking at the church and saying, hey, don't churches do this? And, like, shouldn't we be like, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what we do. Yeah, exactly.
You usually can't beat them to it. That's right. The thing. It's usually when God's people get a chance, they especially in disasters, they get all fired up and they're like, we're going to get a team down there today. It ain't stopped raining, Bob. I don't care. We should get a jump on it. Get the chainsaw.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
You're like, they get all a tizzy when there's a disaster or something going on. Yeah. And, like, it's hard to beat them to it. But, I mean, most of the stories you're hearing out of Texas, like, especially the guys with furniture stores, they're like, I got a ton of beds. And there's a ton of couches.
Yeah, yeah.
There's all kinds of places for y'all to sleep. And he's just taking them in left and right.
That's friggin' awesome.
And then, you know, the place filled with seats and pews, we're like, I don't know if y'all coming in here.
You know what's weird, though? Is we've been a part of this, right? We drove quickly down to Oklahoma after a tornado to help with relief. We've gone to Louisiana after the flooding there like a year ago, whatever. And here, we're coming from Iowa, right? With caravans of people. And then there's like the church on the corner doing nothing.
Yeah.
And sometimes you look, you try not to think that, but then you think, wait a minute, we drove 15 hours to get here.
Church on the corner is like, hey, we were a part of it. It's like, no, you freaking weren't. I get you're physically a part of the disaster, but you still represent Jesus in this
your
situation.
Own people. Help
go
your neighbor.
Help.
Yeah, yeah, we're here to help you help your neighbor. They're like,
no,
we really don't want to.
No, you need to get to work. Just because you were a part of the disaster, Jesus doesn't go, hey, man, make sure you're representing me, unless you got troubles in your life, too. If you got troubles, don't worry about it. Jesus is like, I don't give a crap about your troubles. Like, go work. There's stuff to do.
No, and actually, this came up in the Corinthians Bible study we're doing. Like, that's kind of where the Christian has the liability, even if, like, no one else in the world does. Like, when you're in trouble and there's people around you in trouble, you're actually the guy responsible for holding it up.
Because you still have the peace of the fact that you live in the joy of Christ.
Yeah.
Like, that's like quoting Mike Foose. Cash your check.
Yeah.
We're down here. Cash your check.
Yeah. The bank is in front of you. Cash it. Get to work.
So here's what.
Cash some happy checks.
Hold on. Let's. I'm just to quote Paul real quick on the way that he ran his ministry. Just a quick heads up. We put no obstacle in anyone's way so that no fault may be found with our ministry. But as servants of God, we commend ourselves in every way by great endurance in afflictions, hardships, calamities, beatings, imprisonments, riots, labors, sleepless nights, hunger.
Get it, Paul?
That's not going to sell books.
Paul says, okay, we survived through all that. But I'm going to tell you what we did on top of that. We did it by purity, knowledge, patience, kindness, the Holy Spirit, genuine love, by truthful speech, and the power of God. And you can't open the church door to let people in here? Why?
Paul's like, I literally lived through everything you think you've been through and so much more.
Here's the deal. If they opened the church to let a bunch of people stay there, and as the people came in, they threw them a quick right hook and then went and slept, Paul would say, open the door.
Yeah, everybody that's going to come in here to try to sleep in your pews is going to punch you in the face.
Paul says, yes.
Sweet. Doors open anyway.
Yes, doors are ready.
How many times, what was it, the 40 lashes minus one or something like that? How many times did I take that deal?
Yeah,
those
right.
Kids, come
right.
on.
I've got Christians lined up in shift to take a punch so that you sit in that bed so that then I can tell you that we're still here for you.
Exactly.
No. Come on. Come on.
So what was funny, though, if you go to Christian, don't do this because it's not worth your time, but on ChristianPost.com, so the main article, lead article in the middle of the page is Joel Osteen's Lakewood Church staff members rescued from Hurricane Harvey flooding. Now, hold on. You think to yourself, oh, must be a reasonable defense as to why he's not inviting people. Dig the subline. At least three staff members of Pastor Joel Osteen's Lakewood Church in Houston, Texas, had to be rescued from their homes. While several others experienced flooding due to the impact of Hurricane Harvey. See, the point of the article has nothing to do with whether the man's got the church doors open. It's just three guys who happen to work there live somewhere in which the flooding was bad and had to be rescued. So, like, the big bold type makes it seem like, oh, maybe there's a reason the doors aren't open. But really, it's just dudes live somewhere where there's flooding.
Wow. Is Lakewood Church in Houston?
Yeah.
And it has minimal flooding.
It said that.
I'm trying to be fair to this thing.
No, say, though, Houston's enormous, so I wouldn't be surprised if they're in a place that didn't have that big.
Yeah, so it said that.
It's enormous.
It's
a lot bigger than Des Moines.
It said that there were some pictures of like some flooding going on in the building, like, but minimal flooding, right? So like some guy's house, the whole first floor is covered. They've got some water on the floor in some places in the building.
Yeah, you got to open the doors there, Chief.
I mean, it's still going to rain. Like, I get it, right? You don't want to group people in a place where, like, you're going to get them in there, and then they're going to be trapped, and you're going to have to rescue them out later. Like, but here's the thing. All that can be said.
Well,
yeah.
Hasn't it rained, like, 50 inches or something, though?
In some places, yeah.
I'm thinking, get out of Houston. Why don't they bus them to a church north?
Oh, yeah, right. I agree. There's got to be places along the road, right? Like, there's plenty of places to stick people and move them little by little. Get a boat.
Yeah.
Send a John boat out there. Haul them out.
I mean, that's what I would just want to. It's easy for me to say I'm not flooded.
I was going to say, but isn't the problem with that, like they had within New Orleans, was getting people out is incredibly difficult to do.
Yeah.
Even as it's happening, before it's happening, after it's happening, it's either congested or it's impossible. So, like in a city that's
congested normally.
Exactly. Yeah, that place is enormous.
Hey, like, man, you should get old Creflo down there with his plane and start claiming people out.
You got nowhere to land it, Mike. It's a. He doesn't have the skis on it.
Well, have him outfitted to be a water bucket.
He only asked for a million. So it says, here's part of this article. Some on social media have criticized Osteen and Lakewood for announcing that they had canceled Sunday services because of the hurricane, suggesting that the church is closed to those who need to access the massive arena for shelter. However, and I think this is someone who speaks on behalf of the church, Olaf told CP Christian Post that there are currently about 8 maintenance personnel inside the church who have been instructed to let anyone into the church who needs shelter. But to their knowledge, no one has come to the church seeking shelter. They would have to swim to get there, he explained, adding that there is a flood shelter set up a couple miles from the church at the George R. Brown Convention Center.
Oh.
They're blowing this up then. Somebody is.
Yeah. No.
Agreed. Yeah, no, that's obviously going to happen.
Most of Lakewood's missionary efforts involving Hurricane Harvey will come in the aftermath as thousands of homes and buildings have been damaged. Now, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. That's probably true.
Yeah.
There is some truth to that. I wonder if, but here's the thing. Is that the right, Is that the right expectation? Well, we're not going to advertise that we're taking people in, but if they come, we'll
now,
be
it's
right.
Still not quite the right tact, right? You're saying, look, I guess if someone comes by, we'll let them in. And like, once again, usually, I mean, disasters. The Christians just get all autistic.
I was going to say
they're like, you know what? Open the doors.
We're good at this. We're good at disasters.
Yeah, I was going to say this is our wheelhouse, man. This is our free bird. Yeah. This is our free bird, dude. Like, we can get up there and rock this. And everyone's expectations is, hey, man, that huge church was handing out food and water and life rafts, whatever, man. Like, this is literally, God is going, hey, you exist in this place. The storm is here. People need people. You are my people. Go.
Yeah. I mean, we can whoop up pots and pots of potato salad. I mean, in an hour.
True.
If it needs done.
We can percolate 40 gallons of coffee at a time.
We
get in here. Go help out the people who are relieving people.
That's right. You know it's hardwired in that church. They got straight 480 volts right into that coffee pot. They're busting it out. They're making 6 gallons in 2 minutes. They just fill up a thermos and out they go, filling up the rescue guys.
With big stuff like this, I feel like there should be people in trailers that are driving down there going, and not just from Iowa,
so there are
people there.
So that's the thing. There are, right? So like, this is one of the things that's unfair, and frankly, part of this conversation I would put into this bucket is a little unfair, right? Is you look around and there's, you know, 80 out of 100 churches that are doing something.
Right.
They're raising money. They're sending trailers.
Yeah.
Somebody's got a boat out. Maybe not in Louisiana or wherever Dan ran to the church on the corner not doing anything. But like, there's churches here doing things.
Right.
There's churches all over the country, right? And so is it fair to point at just pick out some congregation somewhere of which you know nothing about their inner workings,
no.
You don't know nothing but they've talked about and say, hey, you're not doing what I expect you to do, so you're not doing nothing and you suck. Okay, well, that's probably not fair.
Right. Well, except for that, like, we know more about the inner workings and the way that church works because of its size and because of the way that it advertises itself. And
so, yeah, so that is the problem. Like you kind of beaconed yourself.
Right.
You came to be the one that, like, if you decided you're going to be on the front lines, you're going to buy the big building, you got the big sign, you kind of put yourself on the hook for representing the folk, representing the church community in situations like this. And so, like, here's the thing. If this is the case, like, you need to at least communicate better
right.
about what you're doing. And validate what people expect the church to be able to do. This is not a defense. Just do it.
Right. That very easily could be a stumbling block for people that did not like the church before and have a resentment for Jesus again and now even more than they did before because they see a church that is either not doing something, which is probably not true in full, but isn't telling people that they're doing something. Now, again, like you said, it's not the job of every church in the world to do something, but the Beacons. Yeah. Talk about it. Say what you're doing. Don't get silent and then let news articles come out that you got three dudes that are at their homes.
8 full-time maintenance men?
That's a lot.
That's a lot. And they seem to make it in all right. They could at least brew the coffee.
Maybe they're good swimmers.
You'd be shipping that coffee out in vats. You know they could make coffee.
You could put it out on boats.
You could just float it. Just
send an SOS boat full of coffee. People are like, sweet, man, my house is flooded.
Get these down to the rescue workers.
This is an artisanal cup of joe.
I kind of want to go.
I'm down.
Yeah,
I do. It's early on in the semester. I can leave school.
That's what I'm thinking. I could take some time off. Maybe make my way down there and be of help. Like, when you can actually be of help. I feel like you roll down there now, you're just going to start swimming around.
Yeah, all you're going to do is swim and go, hey, man, I'm here. Yeah. Thanks for the empathy.
You see that? And I think it was a video, but I only saw the picture of that dog hauling tail down the road carrying that sack of dog food. Did you guys see that?
No.
No.
Oh, it's great. It was just a picture of the floods. And, like, there's this dog that has picked up in his teeth a bag of dog food. He's, like, trucking down the road.
Yes.
Oh, it's great.
Love it. Fido's bringing the help.
Anyway, all right, so that was article number one. I thought, like, A, sometimes I think, hey, it's unfair they're picking on a church, but, like, it's whatever we've done as Christianity as a whole, people have the expectation that we're doing something, and I feel like it's a big responsibility, but we got to meet it.
Yeah.
It's ours to meet. It's our job. We have to be doing that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, non-Christian, or like you said, the devout atheists are going to look at us as a non-taxed entity that's getting money. You better use the freaking money.
Here's the deal, though. I never see the Church of Satan set up no kind of barbecue fest or whatever. It's perfect for their themes, right? They got flames and they got all kinds of stuff. And they could go down to the end and serve up hot food or whatever they want to do. I don't see them organizing. I don't know if they don't have the capability. They only do web properties.
I don't know how it would look if the Church of Satan showed up to a relief situation with a bucket of hot tamales.
I'm just saying. I don't see them putting anything together.
You're right. You're right.
They suck as a community.
Hey, man, why are people not talking to the Buddhist temples about getting in on this?
Hey, yeah, like, what is that?
Why is it the... Okay, here's the deal. Yeah, Christianity is a big deal. We get that. We understand that. But you never see news articles talking about the Zen Buddhists that aren't doing anything for the people.
Are they just humble, or do they not do it?
It's like, seriously, what are the Zoroastrianists doing for Texas right now? It's like, nobody gives a crap.
No, yeah.
What are the Christians doing, though?
See, here's the deal, that we come under the heaviest load, but we deserve it.
Yeah, we do. We have set an expectation of, hey, man, we've been helping for about 2,000 years. Let's get to it.
Yeah. All right. All right.
Maybe it's still from the plague, when we helped out back then.
You think that's what...
People still think that. They're like, hey, man, during that big black plague thing, Christians were all over the place. They were helping out.
Just backed off then.
Yeah. maybe they're still at it.
There was an article on Mere Orthodoxy a couple weeks ago, and it says, Lessons from UK for American Evangelicals. I thought some of this perspective was interesting, so it said, you'll have to forgive my sounding like something of a broken record, but I couldn't let this news pass without flagging it. It said, Tim Farron has announced his resignation as Liberal Democrat leader after he was repeatedly pressed during the general election over his personal beliefs on issues, including homosexuality. Farron issued a statement on Wednesday night saying he felt remaining faithful to Christ was incompatible with leading his party. This is UK stuff. It is understood several senior figures in the party had visited Farron in recent days to attempt to persuade him to step down, though he was initially reluctant. Now, listen, said there's a certain class of evangelicals in the U.S., mostly young, middle class, and white, that dismiss things like Rod Dreher's Benedict Option and other related books as alarmist. Are any of you guys familiar with that?
Nope, no. that was a pile of words.
Yeah, so Dreher's Benedict Option, of which, like, I've read some stuff on it. I haven't read the book itself. But it's basically, he spends quite a bit of time outlining where we're at as a culture, how we got there, and that kind of thing. And that, widely agreed that he's got that nailed. Part of his reaction, though, is to say the Benedict Option, which is we are going to become a supreme minority, and it's time to bail on trying to influence culture. Here's the thing. The people that hate the book take it, that's their synopsis of it. I'm guessing it's more nuanced. Just like every other guy I've ever disagreed with made a much better argument than the guy that hated the book made his argument for him. Right. But anyway, so that's where the discussion comes from, is like, is there a point in time where we say, look, we'll just be an enclave here. Otherwise, we're gonna get swallowed by this thing. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway, that's what they're referring to is his his book, The Benedict Option. So he says, mostly young, middle class, and white that dismiss things like Roger's Benedict Option and other related books as alarmist. While I'm sympathetic to concerns about Rod's tone, I'm much less sympathetic to the idea that Rod is overstating the challenges confronting the Western Church today. And so here's his consideration. This is what kind of stood out. Tim Farron actually supports same-sex marriage. On policy issues, he was blameless in the eyes of progressives, but even that concession was not sufficient. He was consistently grilled during the campaign season about his personal beliefs regarding homosexuality. One member of the party resigned over his views, and many have speculated that part of the reason the Lib Dems underperformed in this election was a general mistrust of Farron because of his religious beliefs. Paired this with last week's Bernie story, and I don't know what that was about, and well, you understand why American Christians who are paying attention are a bit anxious. The issue in at least these two cases does not seem to be anything but the actual policies a person supports or how they would do in their specific job within the political system. The issue is personal convictions informed by traditional religious beliefs. There are all sorts of bad ways that Christians might respond to this fact, but denying that this is happening does not help us either. And so one of the interesting things that I think we need to be reminded of, even in your pursuit to say, if you don't, you want to find areas of agreement or at least sympathy with where people are coming from. Like if I assume some people, even from a political side, have come to their position simply because their value structure is different, but otherwise they are in earnest about it. I think one of the things that this article points out using this guy as the example is recognizing that like, boy, it just sounds conspiratorial, but like there's an agenda here, right? Like it is not just a, and Dan, you can probably speak to this better than I can, right? But like there, it's a progression. It's a, we seed ground on an item. And then we've made progress, and now like we've kind of blurred the lines a little bit, and then we've made some ground on another one. This guy is a leader of a like advocates and supports policies that are otherwise consistent with his party, and he still got screwed because personally this is a belief that he hasn't. So like it's not a broad can we get a party consensus here and have your support? Like because this guy believed this thing, even though he advocated for the other thing, it's insufficient. And so I think the broad point is to say, like, sometimes, like, that seems conspiratorial. It seems like, hey, you're concerned about this, a progressive agenda that tries to, erode certain things. Like, slippery slope arguments always sound alarmist. They always sound like, hey, you're overstepping. They're actually just arguing about this one thing. And that's generally the tactic I would take. Like, I would say, look, just be careful about how alarmist you go with something. But I think there is a reality of which we have to be aware of, a broader scope that says, they are actually trying to figure out ways to erode the base foundation of the things you're believing and picking it away at it one by one. Mm-hmm. Mike, would that be a normal position that you would take or something you would be concerned about? And does this influence that one way or the other?
No. And no.
That wouldn't be a normal position you take.
Correct.
And this does not change that fact at all for you.
Correct.
Why not?
Well, mostly because I'm a lower thinking individual. Most of what you've said has literally, I mean, I've been trying to reconstruct it in my mind and with puppets.
I don't know the position which you speak.
To explain it to myself in a way that I can speak intelligently.
So basically what you're saying is the people of Britain or the UK are having trouble with their party members that are willing to advocate going with what their party thinks. In this case, it was about same-sex marriage, right? That is a liberal Democrat agenda, is that same-sex marriage should be legalized, yes?
Yes.
His personal beliefs are that same-sex marriage is wrong because he's a devout Christian.
Yep.
And they are saying even though he was willing to go for same-sex marriage from a party and advocate perspective, because he still does not believe in same-sex marriage as a Christian, he should be eliminated from that.
And he was.
And he was.
Yeah.
So that is running into the problem of, should we as Americans be, or should we as Americans who are Christians in this society be worried that, ultimately, regardless of what we do, even within political powers and situations like that, what we do and act upon does not matter. What we believe is ultimately what matters.
That's the core of the question.
Right. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
And should we be worried about that? And is that, like you said, within the Benedict option, going to become an issue where Christians are no longer able to influence society and we will be backed into a corner where we can just go, we can't affect policy, we can't affect anything, all we can do is preach Christ and that's it?
Yeah. Mike, what was your question?
I don't understand why that's a problem.
What do you mean?
I mean, if the guy, if the reason he was eliminated from the political process was because of his beliefs in Christ, you know, what's the problem?
It's a problem for believers who are still in 1980 who think that because you're a believer, you should be a privileged status and people should go with it. Even if they disagree with you, they should at least applaud you rather than the reality of we're in a foreign kingdom that is not natural on this planet. And it's a lot of people are having a hard time adapting to the new reality that some people just don't like Jesus people. They'd rather talk about it, you know, but not experience it.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that just unveiling what the truth actually is?
Yeah.
Like, you're basically just saying...
Pretty much. Yeah, exactly. That's what people are afraid of.
Okay, so I don't understand this conversation, Ben. I mean, it just seems to me that, like, they're saying, look, you've been living under this facade, and it was sweet, but here's the real deal. And you're right. Like, no, I can't take the real deal. Put the facade back on.
Yeah, it was cool.
There are plenty of people that are still very afraid of that. Like, right. Christians in this society are still very afraid of
it. And they haven't caught up.
Yeah. They don't realize changed. That we are... It's the problem with the thought that... Well, okay, in my opinion, it seems like it's the problem with the thought that thinking America is God's kingdom. And America alone is God's kingdom.
Here's the deal. That is the general critique I find from a liberal Christian perspective. They're arguing about the same thing.
What do you mean?
What do you mean by that?
Wait, so they're looking and saying, I'm tired of what they consider a perverted mix of Christianity and nationalism and American nationalism. Mm-hmm. So like Christian kingdom and American nationalism, right?
Right, yeah.
And so like you have people on one side who are lamenting about losing something that they've already lost and frankly had lost for a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And frankly probably never had to the extent that they thought they had.
Right. They just thought they did because they were comfortable.
And then the other side is complaint about the guys about the mix of Christianity and nationalism when in reality they don't actually have that. It's a thought process, but it's not a reality.
Right.
Right? So like a lot of the liberal Christian critique that I find in America is saying, hey, this mixture of nationalism and Christianity is really our downfall. I'm like, it's not even real.
Right.
It's
a figment of their imagination.
There are people that believe it, but like I'm not sure the practical reality is that those two things are actually intermixed to the extent that we think they are.
I was just thinking about this the other day, and I'm still processing. I've been processing this for some time, so still trying to come to a conclusion.
Okay,
but there are a group of pastors out there who see their role in the church as they are like in an Old Testament prophet. Getting the people of God. So they're speaking to the community,
yep.
You know, and we have to get the people back to God, all right? And that's who's struggling
right.
with this. Because then there's other side is, you know, like my approach is, well, I'm part of the kingdom of God and my job is to introduce people to Jesus. And if they say yes, I'll tell you how to follow Jesus.
Right.
If they don't, then they're just doing something different. We happen to live in America.
Right.
You know, we're not a... Anyway, that's a totally different way of approaching Christianity and your faith.
So let me see if I back that out a step.
Yeah.
Is it under the assumption, is the other side, the assumption is that like these are actually all God's people and they need to be called back where – Yeah. Like the on the other side of that, which is the side that you were talking about, is that like these people, you have large groups of people who actually have not decided to follow Jesus, and so the surprise, like I'm not calling them back to God; they were never there.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's true. I think that is true. I think they weren't actually following Jesus before, and so like the compelling nature of saying. Repent, they're not turning back towards Jesus.
They weren't, for the first time, they didn't walk away from him.
They
don't even know who he is.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's eerily similar to the Roman Empire, right? Yeah, we'll build y'all a temple. Yeah, you can do whatever you want right. here. Of course we support you. Yeah, that's no problem. I'm going to put this thing in here.
Don't mind this
half Zeus, half naked man. It's going to be
fine. So people think if they get the right t-shirt that has the right message on it, the people will come back, or they put the right message on a sign, or they... you know, have an airplane do a smoke screen, you know, words that all of a sudden the nation is going to fall on their knees and repent and pray and we will be as people, but we've never been as people.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Just to make sure that the whole prophet thing, how often did they I shouldn't say that. Prophets went and spoke to governments because they were kings, right? They went and spoke to kings, but A lot of the time, they were in the streets. Like, they were calling to God's people specifically in the streets, talking to people.
And those were God's people
yeah.
who had fallen away.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right, exactly. Like,
but it's a different
But it wasn't like a go and go speak to the government thing and try and fix it from the top down. It was only that way because they were kingdoms.
So what's interesting is, like, what you find is a lot of the Old Testament dudes who weren't God's people were actually still interacting with God's prophets.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you still have yeah. you still have Nebuchadnezzar dealing with God's
uh-huh.
prophets.
Yeah, yeah.
But they
Sorry, Babylon.
But here's the thing. There was still a sense of power there. Uh-huh. I think there was something to at least power recognizes power.
Oh, absolutely.
And the prophets themselves weren't inherently powerful, but, like, you recognize that a man that bears God's word, there is still power to it. And so, like, as opposed to exercising, like, the clear power of God's word, and his prophets were really mostly calling to repentance his own people
right.
and then telling you how he was going to use not his people to enact such a thing.
Right, exactly. Babylon's going to bring you from where you were. Assyria's going to bring you from where you were.
Yeah, right. And so I think I get what you're pointing at. But it doesn't change the perspective, though, because what Dan is saying is that, like, if you believe that they were God's people and they're just lost, then you also believe that the Old Testament prophets will work because they were also talking
yeah,
to
that's
God's
a good
people.
Point.
Right?
Versus the actuality of they were never God's people in the beginning.
Right. Right. What you don't see, though, is you don't see God's prophets showing up. Like, they'll talk to people of power in other kingdoms, generally invited. But, like, you don't see him traveling over to other yeah. areas and, like, speaking to the nations. Right.
Jonah didn't want to go to Nineveh.
Yeah.
Nope.
I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. God should smite them, thank you.
I mean, yeah. Hey, yeah. Man, that's Assyria. That sounds terrible. I don't want to go there. They're crazy warrior kings.
Yeah, so I guess that's the thing, though. You're right. So the broad reaction to this is, like, if there, I think it tries to call you to be concerned that, say, hey, they're not just after you on your issues, they're after you on your faith. But, like, you should know that already.
Yeah.
It's right. the core of your issues.
We've literally been marked by this for a long time.
The Puritans, like, made us lazy. Because they did set us up with some good thoughts and design and things, but then we just became lazy and didn't realize, wait, they're not all with us.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
We've been pretty comfy for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I suppose this couples, I think, with what Mike was saying.
I don't think I said anything.
You did. You did, kind of.
It was with a puppet.
This is going to make you feel wise here. So, whereas, like, these types of discussions try to help reveal to us the future doom that is in store, It's not revelatory.
Yeah.
It's the core of what you know. You follow a king and a kingdom that is not... like, physically ruling here. And so within those confines, you're going to find a conflict. It's what gets Jesus killed. It's what, you know, causes problems for the disciples, and Christianity throughout the years. As a matter of fact, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine a couple weeks ago. It's like, Christianity actually doesn't know what to do with power, right? When it tries to empower itself, which goes, like, American government, for the most part, it doesn't know how to balance humble service to God and then an overarching power structure. It's the same problem, like, where there are, and these are overblown, but where there are legitimate critiques of Christianity's mingling with, like, Constantine, like, it's because Christianity gets power and then doesn't know how to deal with it well. Because it's not designed to actually have.
We shouldn't be in a power position.
Well, the disciples to the end. The end of Jesus, before the crucifixion, they were still struggling. You know,
right.
They wanted power, and he's like, no, no!
We are literally destined to be the wanderer. We were called to be the one who walks into an established town. That is who we are. We are not the ones who sit in the town established. But, we are the ones who walk into the established town and kick dust at our feet if we don't make it.
So here's the thing. That doesn't preclude Christianity from being a majority.
No.
It doesn't mean that you cannot have 90 Christians to 10 atheists. It's just a power structure for you to rule over the atheists is the thing that Christianity really isn't designed to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, when we've tried to intermingle those things, and this is where it gets complicated because we say, like, well, then how much are you supposed to be involved in government? I think you use the freedom that God has provided, to attempt to influence things.
Like the Sadducees.
No, they ceded. That's not exactly accurate, right? Because they ceded that.
Which you have to do to be in government.
I don't know that's
except
entirely.
For this lib Englishman, which apparently is an offshoot. But I mean, look over the last 30 years of my life, and I see every conservative Christian candidate that came on the box, and I'm like, Yeah, okay. You don't really believe the stuff you're saying. Right? It ain't 2 months after the election's over and he lost. Well, it turns out I was cheating on my wife and I stole a bunch of money on my taxes.
My guess is, like, just like the churches that are helping coverage, there's not news stories about the humble servant. Right? There's not stories about the guy that's been in government service for 40 years, staying faithful to his wife, fighting for the bill that loses every time. Right? Yeah. Like, that guy's not on the front page.
Hey, Clarence, should we go up against homosexuality?
Yep.
Yep, we should vote on that. Yep.
Clarence, you lost again.
Right. You know, the only time that guy shows up, right, is when someone's gonna pick at him. Right, or when someone's upset. But, like, here's the thing. He's not being so bombastic and, like, borderline reckless with his language that he gets targeted. Like, what we have is we have the series of guys who are, like, what we would consider to be the right side of the issue, but their words are so frickin' unloving and unprincipled that you're like, we can't even find the right guy to talk about this because the guy that's talking about it right didn't get any airtime. He's not causing fires somewhere where someone's going to keep an eye on it.
Like the Sadducees.
Not like the Sadducees.
How much television time has Sadducees see, Ben? Zero. Ask me another question on policy at today's time.
Sadducees.
I think here's the deal, and this is why I still kind of want to read this book. I kind of want to read
the book. Of course you do.
Yeah. Benedict Option?
Yeah, so here's because, like, I think it's right to understand what you're dealing with, right? So, like, having a perspective of what we've contributed to. And what does that mean for our cultures? That I think there's some value in that. However, like where some of these reactions act like I'm revealing to you the doom that is coming upon you, that just comes from like a bad reading of application of scripture and frankly disciples' lives and like an understanding of what you serve versus regardless of what government context you're in here or elsewhere, this is going to continue to be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if the thing that, and if you think that your way to resolve it is to put Christianity in power, that's foolish. That's the wrong thought process. That is not like, what are you going to dictate to serve Jesus from the top down and regulate behavior? Good, you
like that has ever worked in the history of everything.
Yeah, like if you're fighting, well, here's the thing is like if the most progressive agenda that ever showed up tried to regulate your behavior, would you concede?
No.
No, of course you wouldn't. You'd go right. You'd go to jail. You'd take a beating. Whatever it was, you'd be like, "Yeah, no, I'm just not going to do that." Right? It's an ideological issue. It's not a law problem. Although, whatever influence to your best ability, fine.
Sadducees.
See, Bova feels what I'm saying.
Bro, Ted,
you don't. I should have been like Essenes.
The Essenes.
Hey, the Essenes were wiped out.
That's
all
true.
Dead. Okay,
that's true.
I'm just saying you want to find a guy idealist to say we're going to do this thing and we're going to hide out away from everything else. Yeah, they went out and found them and then wiped them out.
True.
That's what they didn't even make the scriptures. You can't even find an Essene anywhere except maybe John, who is borderline. John the Baptist might have been an Essene, but he sure they don't call him John the Baptist and Essene.
Sadducees.
All right. This has been a while. Hey, do you guys hear that? Kim Jong Un lobbed a missile over Japan. What are you doing about this, boys?
Today?
I'm not doing anything.
It was mid afternoon. The story came out that like this guy went ahead and just hurled one, Hail Mary'd one over Japan just to show, hey, I can hail one over Japan if I want.
I love it when children get power. Here's the deal. If I get sniped tonight, y'all know why. But, like, we live in a really messed up place.
I mean, here's the thing. Are there qualifications for assassination as biblically based? Dan, what are your thoughts on that? Send a man
there
in?
There is biblical precedence for, hey, we're going to come in and destroy that land.
Yeah.
And kill all those people.
Now, uncouple that with American nationalism.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, that's the problem. We're no longer in the, hey, God's given us the promised land, we got to go clean house to make sure we got it. And we're no longer in the, hey, God doesn't like Sodom or Gomorrah. We are in the, hey, man, I really don't like that guy. America!
I don't know. I think if, we're going to be good citizens in the world and we can save a few million lives, I don't know if it's a biblical thing, but I'd be like...
Dan's like, I'm willing to take that sin on. We're going to see what happens.
You take him out, we'll have a conversation about if that was a good idea.
The best way to show love is to give someone else's life for your friends.
Exactly.
I just,
Dan is like, it's better to ask forgiveness and permission in this situation. Let's do this.
Here's the deal. It's like every road leads to Hitler in these conversations. I get right? But like, I mean, the man is a nut. He's a crazy nut. And so I think to myself.
With nuclear weapons.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's taunting people. Now, here's the deal. I'm not sure our president doesn't fit some of those characters.
I was going to say, we should be careful about who we're calling here.
But he's not lobbed one over Japan,
example. It's not, that's apples and oranges.
So, like...
not yet.
These are bad people. They're very bad people.
I'm not willing to say that's not going to happen. Throw one over Hawaii like, we got them too. Like, I feel like that's what the... sorry.
Here's the deal. I'm willing to concede apples and oranges to a certain extent. His language starts to blend an apple heading toward an orange if the man is not careful.
True.
In either case, though, I put a lot of thought into this. Well, it was like 3 weeks ago when this thing had really kind of amped up, and it felt like tensions were rising. You have a bit of a notional Bay of Pigs going on, and you think to yourself, like. Like, what do you do
that
here?
That was always fun.
What are you supposed to do with this type of thing? Is like, do I think that the good news changed the world? Yeah. Do I think I'm not like completely pacifist, but like, do I think there's a solidarity in saying, look, if I don't reach for the weapon first, like some people need Jesus, but like, I mean, the man is a crazy, crazy man.
He's starving his own people. I mean, this isn't like he has power and he's abusing people.
Yeah.
I mean.
Roman emperor. I mean, here's.
I was going to say, this has been happening for thousands of years. Like, this isn't something that's new in our lifetime. This has been happening in the Middle East for 40 years.
So they take him out.
And into Libya. I mean, it's all. The Gaddafi was the same kind of deal. And
here's the deal. So, but there's no early Christian literature of Christians speaking of or recommending physical violence to Nero.
Right.
Or Domitian.
I think they just knew that the government in charge would take care of those things. It's not their conversation.
Nero is the government.
Yeah, I was going to say Nero was the government. They didn't take care of that stuff.
Yeah, right.
Nero destroyed the temple.
Well, yeah. Okay.
No.
Sorry. No, lit fire to it, didn't he?
Tacitus. No, Nero burned Christians for lands.
Oh, sorry. Not
Yeah. So I mean, Rome burned under his thing, and he blamed the Christians, and like he was responsible for a lot of the persecution in the area, right? But like. So like the government was not taking care of any of that. He was explicit persecution towards the Christians, and let me be clear about it. There's just no evidence of them advocating that, right? Uh-huh. Like it's not. I mean, we don't have mounds of documents, but we have a decent amount, and like nothing points to that.
No, I think the last words of Polycarp that weren't recorded were, "Take him out, boys."
Yeah, on fire, screaming, get him.
Get him.
Someday in a couple thousand years, Revelation style.
I mean, it does not make sense to me. I'm just, but like.
The best way for the Christians to handle this is to wait for a non-Christian man to want to shoot him and then silently agree.
I mean, that seems like the most passive-aggressive Christian way to do this.
David prayed, you know, die and have hardship. I mean, I don't think it's out of our, you know, realm to pray for a person to be removed from power.
No, I don't
know
how
that's going to happen. I was going to say, God's got power. He can handle it.
He can do it.
Like, he's. Smote before, like that's biblical, but
yeah,
I don't know.
He's not. He's leaving him right there. So
you're
right. To you to decide. It's time for him.
I will never agree with a. It's up to you to decide. If we're talking about anything that comes to a Jesus thing.
Wait, so Buva, some guy comes to you and say like today.
I knew this is gonna come right back at
today. All right, says we got a man on the inside. This can go quick. We're gonna knife him.
Here's the problem.
Yes or no, Buba?
I'm so torn right now. It's not even funny. Because the American nationalist in me that wants people to be, like, saved goes, gut him. I know this is...
He's a world problem.
This is a terrible way to argue this, but part of me goes, gut him. Give me the knife. Not even kidding when I say that. Seriously. But then another big part of me goes, that is still not my handle deal here. Like, God doesn't say, kill him. If you think it's okay.
Let's say God gave you the responsibility, because he does give man responsibility in such matters.
If God told me to go kill him, I'd probably get at least a couple hundred Christians behind me to start praying about that, too. And I would wait.
I mean,
I would be throwing rugs out in the rain, waiting for
it
to dry.
I'd be doing all kinds of stuff. Like, God, I need a hand on the wall. Like, I need all kinds of stuff.
I would call that no difference, though, Dan. Dan, if he gives you the decision or doing it, it seems like that's not a distinction at all, right?
Well, okay, yeah. I was just trying to give you as a buffer.
It's either a yes or no.
I didn't want the buffer. I would say that my most animalistic tendencies would go gut him, and therefore, because I try and fight that the most, I would say no.
Dan, yes, like somebody says, Dan, we got a man in place, yes or no?
Yeah.
Dan's in on it. He says
the Navy SEALs are there, they're waiting.
And Dan's order, Dan says do it.
Yep, call it, Hudson.
Mike?
Samson did it.
I mean, if it's going to save a lot of lives, yeah, yeah, yeah. If it's just, you know, some aggression thing, I'd be a whole different ballgame. But,
I know. I get it. I'm still a no. I'm holding firm, foot down, still saying no.
Of course, you know what? If there's some dude in my house going to hurt my family, I'm taking him out. So,
God has not put me in a place of family yet. I'm going to take the bullet.
I mean, there's a lot of smarter people than me who would disagree with me, but...
See, here's the deal. I do not have enough life experience to say whether or not I would do that, but right now, like, I'll take the bullet. I would try and talk him out. I'd take the bullet in that situation, but still, foot down, no.
Yeah. I might take one. I'd give him a chance. I'll give him the first shot, but he's going down.
Here's the deal. The Bible does speak to conventional wisdom that sometimes that we shove off to the side because the Lord didn't speak specifically to it, right? Like, hey, if you're going to show up late at a man's door when he's already in bed with his family, you know... Like, the good Christian poster is like, you answer the door at all hours to any people in need.
You know? But at the same point in time, hey, go away.
And the Bible's like, don't want to get out of no bed and answer the door late at night.
I'm not advocating for putting myself in a crappy part of town and leave my doors unlocked so that I have a guy walk into my house and try and shoot me. I'm just saying, in the scenario.
In conventional, sometimes, like, I think maybe the Lord has given us a common wisdom amongst folks.
You're not bringing any new information to me, hey, fellas. I fully understand that this is a very conflicted statement from
someone walks in your house and starts swiping a machete at you, you go ahead and get take care of that man. You and we're like, if the Lord didn't present a flower to me that says, let him live.
Just kill him slowly so he can come to Jesus.
No, I feel like there's ways to do it without killing him. I know that's so crappy.
I'm not that talented with a spaghetti spoon.
Neither am I, but...
Hold on, but this man presents...
I knew it.
This man presents...
Let's hear it.
I mean, a real tangible danger to the world.
To the world, yeah.
I feel like if you feel that there's options to solve this problem, I want you to get on it today. I mean,
here's the problem. My knowledge or my belief of options does not mean that I have knowledge of said options. Mm.
I don't know. All he's done is lobbed a missile over a country.
He's starving his people. He's been for decades.
Yeah.
Well,
we don't feed our own homeless.
You'd have to go after everybody who was starving their people, we'd be lobbing bombs everywhere.
That's right.
I'm just saying he's more than just a threat. He is doing
active, agree, but that's not just North Korea. Like, Dan is just like anyone not a part of the EU, anyone that's not a part of the UN.
No, saying that.
Anybody.
Well, here's the deal with, like, sanctioned government problems, right? We'd bomb Iceland because they're killing off their Down syndrome babies. Frankly, someone owes a bomb to us for the amount of abortions that go on in the United States, right? By those standards, we've opened up the free world to just
we're
bomb
on our
whatever.
Pedestal. Yeah. As long as we're going to just take a commandment and throw it out the window, we just kill a lot of people, and then we just get all the forgiveness at once.
Yeah, but when does it ever work?
So that abortion thing is where I struggle, though, right? Because, like, if you were to describe, hey, a country is literally killing millions of its own citizens over the last 50 years.
You would go, that's obviously some kind of Holocaust
needs to stop.
Happening.
We can blow them up. I feel like bombs would be a-coming our way.
But because we're arguing whether or not they are alive or not.
Sometimes it's hurricanes.
Is that a person? Freaking stupid.
My answer is no. I'm a no. But I remain extremely conflicted on that matter.
Yeah.
I'm not conflicted at all.
Yeah, Dan is not.
I'm ripping myself in
half.
What
if we did it?
I don't, and here's the deal. I completely do not begrudge that position. If Dan can tell me Christian conviction, I say the Lord says fine, I say, I believe.
Mike hit it perfectly. Here's the deal. If something happens to where some kind of sniper happens, and I can just sit here and go, I didn't do it. I know this is crap. I'm fully aware of this crap, but I would say, I didn't do it. But
I'm glad it happened.
I'm glad it happened.
Here's the deal.
There's some crazy in the world that is gone now. There's one soul that's got to be dealt with among millions of them. We got a chance to help out the millions.
We've given up on casting lots. So what?
Here's the thing.
I would love for you and I to walk into North Korea and go, all right, Kim Jong-un, we got to cast him on.
Yeah.
Let's do this thing.
I'm just saying, like, everyone puts this big shine on how terrible gambling is. And I'm just saying, casting lots is gambling. And so here's what we do, is we get in league with the chef over there, and we just start shoving weird food in there, and he's bound to be allergic deadly enough to one of them, and he will die. And if he survives them, I will take it as the Lord's providence that my food did not kill him. If he dies immediately, I will call it the Lord's blessing.
We'll Mike is going to compile the top 15 allergens in the world and give them all a shot.
Say these are reasonable allergies. And
hey man, here's a whole thing of peanut butter,
that's
Kim.
Right. Here's shellfish. Go.
Good you ever luck. Had jellyfish? We're not certain it's prepared correctly.
I mean,
let's check it out.
Couldn't you just do that with bombs? We love to bomb again.
Some are armed.
Yeah.
Are you allergic?
God, you decide.
Are you allergic to napalm?
What's this? You see this, fellas? Little wiggle of the ear? You know what I'm saying? Yes.
Okay, this is where I'm conflicted, okay?
Yep.
What you were saying, Ben. When you get like to abortion clinics,
yep.
I would never in my life ever advise someone to bomb an abortion clinic or you know any of that type of stuff. But when it happens, part of me says, you know, I don't feel bad at all. I mean, I couldn't ever publicly say great, you know, because I think that's just not.
Yeah,
you know,
it's not acceptable.
If I found out an abortion clinic was on fire and I was a firefighter, I might call in sick.
I'd be like, well, you are murdering children. I mean. So I'm conflicted there. I know I'm not making sense totally.
I don't think any of us are really.
No, what? Because I think like, there's two things in play here, right? Like there is a sense of God's justice, and otherwise it's not passivity. It is intentional, willful sacrifice on others' behalf, which is a Christian thing. But how far that extends to pure evil. Running rampant in the world, and responsibilities of individuals versus responsibilities of governments, and when and if there is a distinction. Like, those are the things in play here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And those are, I think, the areas that cause difficulty. Individually, from what I can safely point to biblically, it is not the same responsibility as governments seem to have from protection of its citizens. But to the extent that you make up a nation as a citizenry, if there's a blurred line in there, I think that scripture is indistinct. It is not as clear as you want to make
it.
And like to the extent that you submit to the justice of a nation when otherwise we fall under what would be qualified for that same level of justice, it becomes difficult to be the moral imperative that says we are right to throw bombs because this man starves his kids when we say we're murdering children.
A lot of them.
And what are we doing about that relative, you know? And so
I
think
it.
Those are the things that are in. Maybe they're notional things that shouldn't have to be in play, but like those are the things that are bouncing around my mind where I'm like, the implication of how I look at this because it's not in my neighborhood is a friggin' fierce implication if I let it drop here.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So I mean, but once again, uncouple yourselves from American nationalism. We're not murdering children. Christians aren't murdering children.
Right.
We're dragging them out. We're trying to get them adopted. Right.
Yeah.
Right? And so like the people of God, which is, that is your citizenship.
Yeah.
And like, I would hate to see America befall those things merely because a lot of the community that we have established is here in America. But like, as citizens of the kingdom, I mean, a bomb gonna take out a couple of us. A couple of us meet Jesus kind of early. Okay. You know, a bomb don't take out some of us. Eh, we got a life full of serving left anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you really do uncouple your American deal in it and look at the world for what it is, you know, our country leadership as a whole, is just as guilty as that one. We paint an evil face on them all you want. But the truth of the matter is we do let mass genocide go down in our country, basically unhinged. I don't even know if the Christians banded together that we could do a damn thing about it. That you could put up enough of a fight to change it. Merely because, like, with that stupid political conversation you had earlier and I didn't understand. Right? Like, if you stand up for that stuff, they're just going to boot you out. They say, look, that's not the wheel we run. We don't run a wheel where we have an honest conversation about that on whether it's good or bad. We're talking about roads and other stuff, and we're just not going to talk about this anymore because it's too much of a stalemate. And we're just going to ignore it. And so, like, you really do have to unbutton your nationalism here and say, look, that's as much as I'm an American citizen and I enjoy the freedoms of which we have, it's hard for me to fight on her behalf and say that the ideals that we're fighting for have to be oppressed upon the rest of the world when, I mean, you know what I'm saying? We kill a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
Mm. All right.
But I love this country.
Yeah.
That makes it the shake. I do love it here.
Yeah. Agreed. We have one of the best lots.
Diaphragm, Dan. Diaphragm.
Like, breathe.
Nice. Sweet land of liberty. Hey, Mike, your kid was over at my house singing Silent Night, I mean, real loud over and over again.
Yeah.
Is that a thing she does? In and out of season?
Like, I would say it's unpredictable, the things that she does. She showed me, she came down this morning with a popsicle stick tied to a string and a magnet, and she had bent 8 paper clips into fish, and then was fishing on the dining room table with it.
That's awesome.
I said, why? She goes, I had a hard time sleeping. I said, where did you get that magnet? I found it.
That's awesome. Hey, man, in your household, I'm not surprised by that statement. There's a random magnet hanging around. Hey, man, I was at the grocery store the other day, and someone was whistling Jingle Bell Rock. Almost threw a grape at him. Rock, shut your face.
Hey, the ice,
stop that crap.
The ice August. Cream band in Bondurant, I mean, he's got 90% Christmas tunes.
Here's obnoxious.
He's never selling ice cream
at Christmas.
I was going
to say, nobody goes down to the ice cream shop for a Christmas night frosty.
Yeah. Like, I don't... I mean, he's a mobile ice cream. He's a truck. He's an ice cream truck, right? So, like, he never does business. So someone has really done a number on him, salesman-wise, to say, you know what you need? The Nutcracker suite.
Maybe he got that for free because they figured what fool would do it.
He didn't have to pay for the tracks.
That's right. He got the clearance basement.
Pay for the summer stuff.
Do they have to pay for those tracks?
Yeah, they're. I mean, I'm sure you buy them somewhere because they're not like songs. It's MIDI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's probably a site. There's probably a guy making a fortune creating ice cream. Hey,
oh, that's
we should
awesome.
Do that.
Yeah.
We should make a Live from the Path Christmas truck or ice cream truck album.
Yeah.
Hey, we could totally, you know, ting, ting to the ting a bunch of popular tunes and Jesus music.
Down.
Like the Chick-fil-A does.
We'll make music.
Like
boxes.
It sounds like elevator.
Or any Chinese buffet ever.
Yeah, why is
like,
that?
Is this the sweet, like, oriental version of Shania Twain? Like, what's going on right now?
I heard, what
hey,
was
oriental
it?
Oriental racist.
I heard all the people said amen, and, like, elevator music style. Out the Chick-fil-A this week, and I'm like, you know, this is all right. It's like a smooth, muted jazz guitar, like,
it's like, yeah, get it.
This is all right.
This is great for me.
Way to go, Chick-fil-A.
Oh, man.
All right, Mike, what do you got over there?
Oh, I got questions. Ready?
Yep.
I got sidetracked on that Second Corinthians jazz from earlier, though.
Okay, ready?
Good stuff.
Dear Life from the Path. My 62-year-old father has recently started to streak his hair with fluorescent colors.
Right.
He does it when he goes to his job and coordinates his hair color with his outfits. As far as I know, his employer has not said anything as of yet. Also, Dad has difficulty with social cues. My mother and I aren't happy with his, quote, fashion choices, and we plead with him to stop doing this. It's embarrassing because it looks stupid and ridiculous.
Jeez. He's really gone to town on that.
He claims he doesn't care what others think and that he has flair.
Yes.
Are my mother and I wrong to criticize his, quotes, flair? Isn't this behavior really inappropriate for a man his age? How can we convince him that he's making a fool of himself and should stop? Your help is appreciated.
All right. I'm almost as conflicted on this as I am the Kim Jong-un thing. Because part of me goes, heck yeah, old man. You better walk your friggin' suit backwards than paint a face on the back of your bald head. I don't care what you do. Do it. But at the same point in time, like, if I dressed like that, and someone didn't tell me, hey, Boova, you look like an idiot, I'd be upset at the people around me. I would look at them and go, hey, shut your face, I don't care, but I would still be upset that they didn't call me out on something. I don't know.
They're egging him on.
Yeah.
He is loving the fact they hate it.
Friggin' fluorescent? I wear bro tanks. I do not streak fluorescent colors into my hair that match my shirt and pants.
Well, I heard the word streak, and I'm glad where it went.
Yeah. I was wondering if there was going to be a 62-year-old man that was forcing nudity on his
community. We don't want that. We don't need
community.
That.
No.
No. But I love the neon.
Okay. If you do this, there is a wrong and a right way to do this. If you're lovingly going, hey, Dad, that's kind of a weird getup. What are you wearing? And he goes, hey, shut your face, son. And walks out the door. Okay. If you're like mean and rude about this, be like, you old man, you look like a curmudgeon. Shut your face and stop wearing that.
I mean, what,
stop
do,
being
you,
a schmuck.
What do you care?
Yeah, that's
like,
what I'm saying.
Hey, man, I have to take this in.
Yeah.
You are assaulting my eyes. Shut your mouth.
I mean, it's not doing any harm to you.
He has no one left to impress.
Yeah.
He's enjoying himself.
I can't wait till I start streaking stuff through my hair to match my shirt and pants.
Now, here's the thing, though. Is like, I know people that don't have anyone left to impress. They go completely the other way. They stop combing their hair altogether. They wear dirty clothes.
You look like you're the dude in Jumanji.
They
what
stop
are you doing?
Shaving. They're like, you know what? I don't care, which means it'd be silly for me to put a bunch of effort into stuff that I don't care about. And so he's doing the exact opposite. His flair is totally meant to bring attention in.
Yeah, get a reaction.
He's
yeah,
telling
yeah.
lies. That's the thing. It's like if he wanted to be honest and say, I really dig this and I think it's awesome. But like, otherwise you wouldn't wait until you went out to work or out to whatever to do anything. You just do it at your own house and be like, I do this at home because I think it rock stars.
Yeah, maybe he's looking for attention.
Yeah, he's looking for attention. And it's the only thing is that bothers me is not that he's flaring his hair, but that he's lying about it and making it sound like it's for some other reason.
Well, did they say that though?
What?
That it was for some other reason? I thought he just said, I have flair.
What was his response?
I don't think his response was, I'm doing this for my own good.
Maybe when he was younger, he just got a lot of compliments for his hair and whatever, and his look.
And he misses it?
And he's missing that because he hasn't had it for 20 years now that he's 60. And this is a way to get it again.
I remember when I listened to The Misfits and dyed my hair pink. It was great.
He claims he doesn't care what others think and that he has flair.
Okay, I'll agree. That first part's a lie.
Yeah.
Just say you have flair. You flamboyant old man.
Yeah, I care what other people think. I want them to know I have flair. That would be honest.
That would be an honest statement, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, wouldn't you ever looked at yourself in the mirror and be like, I got flair and only I appreciate it. Now I'm going to change it so others don't have to take it in.
I put clothes on that make people like appreciate that I'm wearing those clothes. I don't
I
do
hope
any outfit
true
for
all
me.
The time. I always appreciate that you have clothes on.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Everybody does. Like, man, Boova did not go streaking today.
Thanks for the forethought.
Thanks, Boova. Lord.
This is a good day.
Yeah, you will not have that run into that situation.
Okay, let's see what Secular's advice is here. Secular says, repeat after me, we cannot change other people. We can only change the way we react to them. Understand that how your father presents himself reflects only on him, not you.
That's not true.
That's not true at all. You got a crazy uncle that wears a banana for a hat. Everyone's going to go, hey, aren't you that crazy uncle guy?
Yeah, you think Kim Jong-un's cousin's like, dang it, man. Can you tone it down just a little?
He doesn't reflect me. I can't change him.
Yeah. Come to your birthday party. No,
what's your name? Chuck Oon?
It says, because you and your mother have tried reasoning with him and he refuses to listen, you all might be happier if you stop making his fashion choices your problem.
That was
a really snotty
way to say that.
Repeat
after me.
It's that, on its face value, I get that that's a principled place, but that's not really true. Like, if I completely, like, always acted like a ridiculous, streaking my hair, drawing a lot of attention to myself, people would judge my wife. And she would say, what's the matter with you? You were somewhat responsible for this man.
That's true. Ben, if you showed up at any point in time with some kind of Guy Fawkes sweet goatee shaved into your face, I'd probably call you out and be like, dude, you got to make better choices in your life.
Yeah. Now, here's the deal. People would do that, but to the extent that I care whether other people are like shallowly judging off of things like, how do I look or whatever, maybe I shouldn't care.
Yeah.
And anybody that would be close enough for me to know would otherwise ask my wife, why haven't you talked to him? And she would say, I have. He refuses to change.
Me and the kid did. Yeah. Nothing happened.
And then, but so like, I suppose it's the right way of like, whose opinion do I care about? And, as long as I have that in the right perspective, maybe this doesn't bother me so much. I would probably, I would let it go, except for the fact if I was married to this man and I felt like he was lying to me about it.
Yeah.
Then I would care.
Yeah, because it seems like it undergirds some kind of issue where he's worried about.
I don't care what people think about me.
Yeah, actually, because here's the thing, is if he was always been like this, you wouldn't be asking this question.
That's right.
If he was always, because like there's some people that just have a flair, and when they're 55, they still flaring, and you'd be like, yeah, he's always flaring.
That guy's been wearing that flamingo shirt since 84.
Yeah. It would be weird if Ric Flair started at 80 going, woo!
Right? Ricketts, stop it.
He's been doing it his whole life. I mean, everybody just expects it now.
I'm not Rick Lame anymore, I'm Ric Flair.
I saw him in my neighborhood. He was walking around, walking a dog, a Pomeranian. 4 weeks ago in my neighborhood.
I feel like Ric Flair would have more than one Pomeranian.
Yeah, but he only walks one at a time. He likes to give him special attention in Bonnerant.
Gotcha, I like your style.
That I said, I called out to him. He ignored me. That's how I knew it was him.
Did you? Woo!
Here's the deal. A normal person turns around when you go, hey, Rick, woo! But like, if you're actually Ric Flair, you hear that all the time, and so you don't turn. And so that's what I believe happened. Ric Flair's in my neighborhood.
Man, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'm going to Bonnerant.
You got time for one more?
Hey, don't ruin this for me, boo. Don't act like a fanboy in my neighborhood.
When Rick I walk around his woo, just waiting for people to not react like, oh, you're not Ric Flair.
Yeah, go ahead.
Dear Life from the Path, my wife seems to only want to have sex with me when I'm supposed to be at work. It's really flattering, but I am at risk of losing my job. We don't have enough savings to last more than a couple of months if I'm out of work. She wanted me to call in sick today, but I didn't know how to say no without offending her. Help.
Man up.
I have a couple thoughts.
Say... Hey, sweetie, I love this deal, but we gotta make money still. Be practical.
Or take the morning off.
Yeah, that'll get the morning fires burning.
Yeah, I'm not
saying. Be practical.
You go with this.
Yeah.
Go with this.
Well, you don't need to call in sick for 4 hours. It doesn't have to be a marathon.
Yeah.
What? Get up 20 minutes earlier.
If I were an employer and someone kept calling in every morning or every other morning or once a week in the morning, I'm firing that person within weeks.
No, he's not going to call in. Just get up a little earlier.
I worked for an oil change place, and the only acceptable reason for calling in late was this exact thing. The owner told me multiple times, if you're going to be late because this is going to happen at your house, that's fine with me. Just give me a heads up. And still people didn't use it.
It's like, you're not even married.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I'm hungover, Mike. Unacceptable.
Yeah, no good. I'm having sweet love with my wife. Take your time. Take your time.
Do not call me at this moment.
Man, as someone who's run people's attendance, if I ever heard that, I'd be like, don't tell me that. I'm firing you. Leave me alone.
We did not have an HR department.
Yeah, I was in the HR department.
Just dudes.
And that's understandable. If you work in an oil change place, sir, who wrote into us, keep living. Call in all you want.
I mean, there has to be a way to reconcile this. This is too black and white of a problem.
Right, it's only at 10:30, and I gotta be at work at 10:45. That's true. Wake up earlier. Get up at 7 a.m. Change the clocks in your house so she thinks it's 10:30.
Hey, I mean, go
and it's actually 7:30.
Get
Deal.
Up and go to work at 6:30, and come home for 15-30 minutes or whatever it is that you gotta take you do your deed, and then go back to work.
If the wife wants it done, you get her done.
Yeah,
you stay, just man, do it.
Stay working extra 20.
Aware that
I
am the only non-married person in this room, but you guys, okay, all right, well, maybe this will change when I become a married man. Then I'm just like,
husband,
forget work,
wife.
Don't care.
She's in every day. You just got to figure out how to, I mean, you have problems no one else has, friend.
Yeah.
Work this, put the thoughts on it. Get a couple of guys and some and some fries.
I'm getting so much insight into the world of the married man.
I've not heard one man complain of this.
Yeah.
Like, she's always hot to trot for me when I'm at work and supposed to be doing something else. Not one man have I heard complain.
Work a freaking night shift.
That's because every reasonable guy doesn't.
He's the only guy that switches. I got to have the night shift, boss. You want to put on third shift?
Third
yes.
shift, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Can you work the overnight? Deal.
Deal. Yeah. The Lord shines.
And I'm paid extra.
All I need to be able to
it's
do
a double win.
Is be home at 9 a.m. That's all I care about.
How is it? Yeah, these are the types of problems male ingenuity solves. Here's the thing. You've never heard any guy complain about that because every guy posed with this problem, if it ever existed, freaking figured it out.
Yep.
That's how the night shift began. It was not a production issue.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a reproduction issue.
No industrial revolution that made it so we could work overnight. It was like, hey, man, my lady only wants to do the Jones and when I'm supposed to be working. I'm going to work later.
Yeah.
I'm going to work when it's night.
And he had a male boss, and he's like, we can set that up.
We can work that out. I got another boss that's the same way. He can't be here during the day. He's gonna manage you at that
time. Right.
We'll keep those machines running. No problem.
You coming in 11 to 6. We ain't going to make a dime.
Mr. Ford is going to be really excited.
All right. Segular's advice is, try this. Ask your wife, which is more important to you, me in your bed or food on the table and a roof over our heads?
Hey, man, now I feel bad for my original advice because I sound like that.
I'll be home by 6 o'clock. I'll be home by 6 o'clock. Be ready.
Don't look at me.
Our advice is way cooler.
Your advice was way cooler. I came in this like, hey, man, be practical. And then I was immediately turned around like, man,
no.
I kind of get it now. I suppose I understand. Don't be practical. Figure this stuff out in a different practical way.
Non-check cashing Boova tries to be practical about this thing. The check cashing Jesus
That's
man
true.
Says, we'll straighten this out.
We'll straighten this out. No sweetheart, problem. I'm going to work late nights.
Yep.
Hey, yeah, the reason I go to work and bring money home to be able to pay my bills is so I don't have anything to worry about when good times show up.
Yeah. That's a very valid point. That is an incredibly valid point
right
there.
If someone's offering good times and that's the end result I wanted, I feel like I will figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No more advice necessary.
You were listening to Life.
Problem solved.
If this is a problem you're having, A, you need a different group of friends.
Sadducees.
B, you come in. We're going to talk about this. We'll straighten this right out for you. All right. Thanks for hanging out with us. Yeah, that's all I got. I don't know what's going on. Oh, hey. Wayne Stewart's out with a new album. Go check it out. If you go to ReverbNation.com, do a search for Wayne Stewart. Here's the deal. I was iffy at the premise. They're like bluesy Jesus numbers by a white man, and I thought to myself, Wayne, you've a step too far.
The totems are falling.
No, Wayne's a cool guy. He's got all kinds of talent, but I thought I don't want to listen to this because I will think less of him. Here's the deal. Besides the fact that I hate trumpets, I don't like band instruments in the blues.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal: a blues man doesn't have a trumpet. He can't afford brass. He's got an old good like a dobro or something. So it's
a weird thing to bring in.
I'm just saying. Okay. So anyway, so besides the fact that there's brass in it and it's off-putting to me, solid. It surprised me. I really dug on it. So go check it out. Go to Reverb Nation. Just do a search for Wayne Stewart, and check out that new album of his. It's really quite good, and I think you will enjoy it.
Okay.
All right. In the meantime, be faithful to means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.